Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. It is Sunday, February 25th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, and it is just ticking towards 10:30 here in the evening in Vancouver, Canada. So for all intents and purposes, the weekend is over. And what a weekend it's been. It's been cold and damp and windy and stormy and just basically miserable here in Vancouver over the past couple of days. I mean, hey, Pacific Northwest is going to Pacific Northwest, and yeah, rain and miserable weather is basically what we put up with this at this time of year, and it's waterproof basically everything all the time, but it's all good. And of course, like many of you, I spent a good portion of my weekend sitting around and watching Drive to Survive on Netflix. Season 6 dropped a couple of days ago, so I binged that on Friday evening, and in first thing Saturday morning when I sat down with my, for breakfast, basically the phone came out and just picked right up where I left off on Friday night, and really enjoyed it. But we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. Before that, just a couple of things I want to talk about. Got a couple of really interesting things I wanted to talk about on the show tonight, but I'm just going to kind of tuck those away and put them into a folder for now because we've got some preseason testing to talk about. We've got some miscellaneous news to talk about. We've got some Christian Horner news to talk about. And that's all before we get into my take and my reaction, which has become like an annual thing on the latest drop of Drive to Survive. So I know I'm being a little bit of a tease, but hey, that's all good. Want to give everything, proper time and air and do it all justice. So I got some cool things I want to talk about, and we'll do that in an upcoming episode. All right, before we get into the show tonight, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. You can head on over to their website, theraceweekend.com, and that is weekend, WKND. And you can use my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to save 10% on a year's subscription. And once again, that is theraceweekend.com, and weekend is WKND. Also, check out racingexclusives.com. Tease and the crew have assembled a fantastic collection of authentic Formula One memorabilia, and you can find them at racingexclusives.com. Really, really cool stuff. Comes with a certificate of authenticity, which makes you know you got the real deal, which is always really, really cool to have in any Formula One fans collection. Also, backed by popular demand is our Formula One Fantasy League. And guys, let's be honest, the F1 Fantasy site is just terrible. I was trying to get this set up a couple of days ago. I posted something on X before I did the show on Thursday night, posted the link, and people were asking, was this thing live? Can't find it anywhere. Got a message saying that the league name was under review, and all it was Scuderi F1 Pod or Podcast. And can't even remember, because when I log in now, I can't even find the league in the inside their stupid site there. Anyways, it is up and live. It should be there. I have posted a number of times today the link to it, and also the code for the league. If you have a pen and paper or you want to type this into your phone quickly, just do that right now. And the code for the fantasy league is Charlie 8 Romeo Oscar Quebec Zulu Quebec 0 Yankee 10. I'll say that again. It is Charlie 8 Romeo Oscar Quebec Zulu Quebec 0 Yankee 10. Anyways, also check out Scuderi F1 Pod on X, and I will post that. It should be fairly easy to find in our timeline. And let's get as many people to sign up as possible. It was good fun last year. They seem to wait a little bit too close to the start of the season. Pardon me. I seem to remember this time last year that it went live only a week or so before the start of the season. You think they give people a little bit more than a week to get everything all up and running, but it's going right now. Like I say, take a look for it. I do have a number of prizes set up. Still trying to get hold of the 1/2 scale autographed Pierre Gasly helmet away from Mark Hamilton. Still haven't heard from him, and Still don't know where he's at. Hope he's doing good. Anyways, that was presented to the listeners of this show by Racing Exclusives. So hopefully we can get that for the eventual winner this year. But got a bunch of other prizes and get that all sorted out in the next little bit so I can announce those. And looking forward to it. This year, I promise I will be a little bit more diligent and make sure that I do put my team in on time so I can take part rather than setting my team at the beginning of the year and then never doing any maintenance and then basically ending up in the bottom third of the of the fantasy league. Anyways, that's my promise to that. All right, just quickly before we get into things here, I wanted to talk about my thoughts about season 6 of Drive to Survive. Before I do that, I just wanted to read the latest news here on the ongoing Christian Horner investigation. You know, this has been ongoing now for, the last two and a half weeks. You know, these allegations of inappropriate behavior that have been levied against him. And, you know, there's an internal investigation going on at Red Bull. You know, there have been all sorts of people that have made, you know, comments on this and press releases, Formula One, Red Bull. You know, the latest today was Jim Farley, who's the CEO of Ford, and you know, Jim had you know, was pretty blunt and you know, pretty straightforward in what he had to say. So the full statement hasn't been released, but the Associated Press has seen a copy of it, and Jonathan Noble at over at motorsport.com managed to find out a little bit. It's posted a couple little quotes in the letter, which you know, like I say, has been seen by Associated Press. Jim Farley said to Red Bull that Ford is, quote, increasingly frustrated, however, by the lack of resolution or clear indication from you about when you anticipate a fair and just resolution of this matter. We are likewise frustrated by the full lack of transparency surrounding this matter with us, your corporate partners, and look forward to receiving a complete account of all findings. Then the goes on to say, quote, as we have indicated previously, without satisfactory response, Ford's values are non-negotiable. It is imperative that our racing partners share and demonstrate a genuine commitment to those same values. My team and I are available at any time to discuss this matter. We remain insistent on and hopeful for a resolution we can all stand behind, end quote. So just a quick reminder for those of you that might be a little bit new to Formula One. Red Bull currently has the Honda engines that weren't Honda engines, which are now Honda engines. Long story, it's confusing. Anyways, Honda engines, the back of those cars, they're going to be racing with those for the next couple of years until we go into 2026. And previously, you know, when Honda was kind of waffling and deciding what they wanted to do, whether they wanted to stay in Formula One or not, Red Bull decided to get their own powertrain division up and running. So that's called Red Bull Powertrains. That's been up and going for a couple of years now. So they partnered, you know, in this intervening time, they partnered with Ford, who are going to be a full partner, you know, starting in 2026. But, you know, there is things going on between them right now. I mean, Ford's already started to flex on that. If you see the pictures of the factory for RBPT, you know, there's the Red Bull logo beside it, the Ford logo. So this is a real thing. But, you know, Jim Farley is pretty clear that, you know, if things are not satisfactory, if it's not to their liking, it's pretty obvious when you read between the lines that this could become a major thing. When he says in that one line that Ford's values are non-negotiable, and then he goes further on to say that we remain insistent upon and hopeful for a resolution we can all stand behind, that, you know, if this doesn't work out the way that they, you know, that they expect and they want, that are in line with their corporate values over at Ford, and rightly so, that there potentially could be problems. And I find it a little bit interesting that you know, Red Bull, according to what's been leaked by AP on this, you know, on this letter that went from Ford to Red Bull, that they feel like that, you know, they haven't been completely, you know, transparent or forthcoming and everything going around the Christian Horner allegations and the investigations. And they really feel like they should be brought up to speed. And let's face it, there's big money. There's a lot at stake here in reputations. And Ford obviously doesn't want to have their reputation stained and and, you know, if something's gone on with at Red Bull, and, you know, this is all just speculation. Don't want to get, you know, too far into that. But if things aren't completely to their liking, who knows what they would do. And it makes you wonder if that relationship or that partnership could be strained or damaged, or, you know, who knows? Maybe there's some language in there that they could potentially dissolve it. I mean, he certainly sounds very, very concerned. So this is a situation to keep an eye on for many, many reasons. Okay, well, let's jump into the discussion about Drive to Survive Season 6. As I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, this is something a lot of us have invested our time in over the weekend. There's, what, 8 or 9, 10 episodes, I guess. What is it? 8 episodes? I can't even remember. I felt just in general that it flowed a lot better than it did last year. Yeah, so there would have been 10 episodes. I'm looking here at my notes, which is good because, like I say, I think it flowed a lot better than Season 5, and I really felt it was a lot more enjoyable. So I felt, you know, they went back to their roots a little bit. I felt like last year in Season 5, it was a bit of a struggle. You know, they typically tend to be seasons of about 8 or 10 episodes there or thereabouts. And last year, I felt that when I sat down to watch it, and this has become like a ritual over the past several years, that when the new drop comes out a week or two before the season, it's basically just to jump in with both feet and sit down, get the popcorn, and basically you know, power through the entire season. And it's a great way to kind of recap the season that was. It's not always 100%. Accurate to what happened the season before. They tend to focus on certain storylines than others, and a lot of the threads kind of weave their way through the entire season. They don't always necessarily tell the full picture of what happened in the championship. But you know what? That's fine. For, you know, if you want something that's more granular or really gets down into the nitty gritty about Formula One, how the sport is run, how the cars are designed and built, it's probably not for you. But having said that, a good portion of people that enjoy this program or this series enjoy it because they do tell a good story. I mean, the production, the photography, and everything around it is first class. It has been right since the very first season came out back in, what was it, 2018, 2019 or thereabouts. And that high standard has just been, you know, constant throughout all the six seasons. But this year, I felt like they got more back to, there was a lot more on the track action. You know, the storylines, I felt, were a lot more of the things that maybe we didn't hear a lot of during the season. And I saw a lot of criticism on social media over the course of the weekend. Well, you know, it's not really legit because Max really didn't get involved. And, you know, like there wasn't as much of Red Bull and stuff like that. And I mean, there was and there wasn't. I mean, there wasn't as much Christian Horner and Red Bull stuff as there was over the past couple of seasons. But you know what? I'm honestly okay with that. I mean, Red Bull and Max and Checo, they got all the headlines. They got all the focus over the entire season. And like on this show, it just seems that for one reason or another, that a lot of the headlines, a lot of the storylines that come up in Formula One, especially over the past couple of years, always to seem to be very Red Bull or very Red Bull adjacent. You know, they always seem to get pulled into the headlines. And of course, you know, with a sport where you have 10 teams and 20 drivers, you know, that pool, you know, that news cycle is going to be pretty, you know, small, and the stories are going to be, you know, there's not going to be a lot of them all the time. And when you get like a season where we had in 2023, where Max and Red Bull were so dominant, and all the records that fell, I mean, yeah, you know, whatever. We can have that discussion about, you know, dominance in Formula One, maybe making the sport a little bit boring, but we shouldn't take away what Max and Red Bull did last year. I mean, they built a fantastic car. Max raced a fantastic season. Honda built a great engine, obviously, put in the back of that car. And all those records that came tumbling down and all the races that Max won, I mean, he won all but one race last year, and which was nicely documented in Season 6. That was Carlos Sainz winning in Singapore, you know, in the second half of the season. But You know, I feel that notwithstanding that the season was very good. I felt like they touched on a lot of the different stories that maybe didn't see the light of day as much as they should have over the course of last season. And if they did, maybe it just didn't stay in the consciousness of the Formula One fans as long as it should have, if that kind of makes sense, if you know what I mean. But it was enjoyable. I thought it was really good. I mean, you go back and I'm not going to go down, you know, completely, you know, episode by episode. I'm going to go down, you know, quite a bit and tell you about like the different things that I liked about some of the episodes and some of the storylines. But I think, you know, it was good. You know, I think that in general, the folks over at Box to the Box Films did an excellent job of making for what was honestly a very boring season. Regardless of the fact that Max was basically flawless and for an entire season, and that Red Bull was basically bulletproof for an entire season, and the mistakes and mechanical problems that they had were very far and few between. So despite the fact that Max smashed all those records, he won the championship, won all those races, there wasn't a lot of exciting, you know, fighting at the front of the grid. I mean, there was plenty of action in other parts of the running order and in other parts of, especially in the Constructors' Championship, which was a good focus of season six of DTS. But I thought they did a great job of making what was essentially a very boring season in 2023 into a very, very enjoyable 10-part series for season six of Drive to Survive. As usual, you know, there was plenty of Günther Steiner, and you know, it was interesting because he's become a bit of a cult figure in Formula One, absolutely because of how he's featured on Drive to Survive over the last number of years. And I thought it was kind of a poignant right at the very end of episode 10, I think it was called Red or Black, when it kind of comes down to the story of Ferrari and Mercedes fighting it out for the last, for second place in the Constructors' Championship. You know, there's this kind of like this one kind of like before kind of fades to the credit, there's one final screen that says Günther Steiner's contract with Haas was not renewed after the end of the 2024 season, because, you know, it was interesting throughout the year and, you know, throughout the season and throughout the previous seasons, you know, you see Günther on the pit wall, you see him being interviewed, you see him talking to the drivers, sometimes out begging sponsors for money and things like that, which was not unusual. But, you know, you always hear like these clips where Günther goes into his office and, you know, completely different body language, completely different tone of voice, talking to Gene Haas. And that's kind of how the season wraps up after Abu Dhabi. You know, Günther goes into his office, closes the door, and you can hear him talking to Gene, and you can hear Gene kind of like, you know, saying a couple of things, and then, you know, it was what an effing season that was, or something to the to that effect. It kind of fade to black, and Günther's contract wasn't renewed. But I also thought it was an interesting scene there. I can't remember which episode it was. It was also a little bit kind of like touching. I thought it was a little bit of a, you know, fairly human scene where Günther's in Italy. He goes to Mattia Binotto's vineyard, and Binotto obviously was let go by Ferrari after the end of the 2022 season. I just talked about him a couple of days ago now that he's taken a job still in the automotive industry, but outside of Formula One. And that's the first time that he's been, you know, done something like that. I mean, he's been involved in Formula One for over 25 years, but I thought it was a very personal, a very intimate moment. The two of them sitting there in Mattia's vineyard, you know, having a meal, having a glass of wine. And I couldn't help, well, I mean, of course, you know, looking back, it's always, you know, hindsight is 20/20, right? And, you know, knowing now what Günther didn't know when that scene was filmed, and who knows at what points last year that scene in Binotto's vineyard was filmed, but it was kind of interesting because you could kind of get that vibe that, you know, Binotto, I mean, he was always kind of like a bit of a chill, relaxed kind of character, but I felt that he seemed much different. It seemed like there was no, I wouldn't say intensity, but you could tell that it seemed like he was a person living with much less pressure on his shoulders. And I couldn't help but wonder if that was a little bit of intentional foreshadowing. I kind of even wonder then if Gunther was wondering, well, you know, could I do something like this once, you know, the curtain falls on my career in Formula One? And I thought it was kind of interesting too, because he said something to the fact in that scene that he hasn't done exactly the things that he's wanted to do or achieve the things that he's wanted to achieve in Formula One in his career, and kind of wonders how and when and if that might ever come to pass. And at least for now, it's not going to. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but we'll jump into it. And another person that's become, I wouldn't say a cult figure, but somebody that's featured quite a bit over the past couple of years is Aston Martin chairman Lawrence Stroll. And Lawrence is an interesting person, and you know, obviously the father of Lance, and the owner, the person behind Aston Martin, both the road cars and also the Formula One team. And it was interesting because I guess it was 2 years ago now, there was when it was still Racing Point, or maybe it's even longer ago when it was still Racing Point, and they're sitting in there, and he's like the chairman. Now he's promoted himself to executive chairman. And hey, why not? If you have the clout and the wherewithal to own a team and a car company like Aston Martin, you can call yourself whatever the heck you want. But again, a very, very intense kind of person. And I have no doubts that when it comes to business, that Lawrence Stroll is a very ruthless and a very focused and knows what it takes to be successful in business. And I can't help but think that despite the fact that they struggled last year, that this will be a team at some point that does manage to pull it together and is able to challenge for wins and podiums. I mean, it was exciting to watch what Fernando Alonso did last year, especially in the first half of the season, until they kind of got off track with the upgrades that were actually downgrades on their car. And it was a great story up until that point. But I found it quite shocking when it was revealed just the extent of the injuries that Lance Stroll had, because at the start of the season, when he had that that biking accident, and again, you sort of talk about these intimate moments, and you see Lawrence talking on the phone to Lance after he hears about the accident and his injuries and things like that. And when you see Lance getting into the car in Bahrain, you just got to be thinking, boy, Lance, buddy, should you even be doing this right now? And it just goes to show you just like how competitive Formula One is, and just human nature of athletes that they just don't, they think they're good to go, right? It's just, I've seen it many, many times with, elite level soccer players that when they come back from injuries and when they're rehabbing and things like that, it's like, oh, I'll work through it. I'll be fine. I'll just train and I'll be okay. But it was really, really interesting. Anyways, I'm going to take a quick break. Going to come back on the flip side. Going to still be talking about Drive to Survive for a little while yet. So hope you enjoy the discussion. So please don't go away. We'll be back after a short message from our sponsors in just a moment.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armorall, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armorall products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. All right, welcome back to the show. Mark Daly here. This is episode 518. Yeah, season 9 of Scuderia Formula One podcast. Been going for a very, very long time now. I was just looking at my agenda here on the other screen and it's like, wow, that kind of just like sunk in. That seems like a very big number here. But yeah, I've been around for getting close to a decade of coverage and loving every moment of it. Okay, back to Drive to Survive Season 6. So just going back to some of the different threads that I think that were really, really interesting that wound their way and weaved their way through the entire season. And one of those was the whole situation with AlphaTauri and Danny Ricciardo and Nyck de Vries and Liam Lawson. And I thought that was really quite well done, because the second episode in the series, I can't remember which one it is now or what it was called, but it basically documents the struggles that Nyck de Vries has and then deals with the moment that he's let go and Danny Ricciardo was brought back in. And I thought it was pretty cool to get that behind the scenes footage of watching Ricciardo in a Red Bull at Silverstone, bit of a damp track. And, you know, it's funny, right? I mean, you talk about, or I was talking about just now, about how Drive to Survive made Gunther Steiner, to a certain extent, a bit of a cult figure. And I think that Danny Ricciardo, his popularity is also due in large part to, his appearances in Drive to Survive over the past several years, because he is that outgoing, flamboyant personality that he just does well in front of the camera. And, usually what Danny says and does on the show really works. And I think he just is a fair, he is like the way that he comes across, a bit of a silly, goofy at times person that's, I think he's quite genuine, but it's cool to see those moments when he's behind the car and, in the car and behind the steering wheel, how much it means to him and, the drive that he has to get back. And it's interesting too to hear, Christian Horner's thoughts on how things with Ricciardo's career progressed or maybe devolved after he left Red Bull and went to Renault/Alpine and then over to McLaren, and then is kind of given this opportunity to come back to Red Bull this time last year as a reserve driver, and the fact that he was going to be doing that and then also as somebody that was going to do a lot of marketing for them. Nobody really expected that he would be back into a car after sitting out for 8 months or whatever it was. But, if you go back and see just how badly Nyck de Vries struggled, and it's, I would say it's funny, but the irony is there, because Ricciardo struggled after he left Red Bull, went to Renault and then McLaren, and those cars never really worked for Ricciardo's style either. And de Vries basically says the same thing, that the Formula One car that he had at AlphaTauri, that ATR10 last year, was a difficult car to begin with. And, de Vries, being very successful in F2 and Formula E and things like that, just wasn't able to drive the car, that AlphaTauri as well, and ultimately paid for it with his job. But anyways, it's really nice the way that that story kind of goes. And I thought it was quite interesting when they get to the part at Zandvoort later in the season, in practice, when Oscar Piastri crashes into the barrier, and then it's Danny Ricciardo that comes around and has to take evasive action and plows into the tire barrier himself just to avoid driving into the side of Oscar Piastri. And there is like some irony there, right? I mean, Piastri is the person that he took Ricciardo's seat at McLaren and forced Ricciardo to the sidelines, and he wasn't driving a car. So, I mean, there was nothing malicious, obviously, of Oscar Piastri, crashing his car on purpose or anything like that. It's just, it's ironic in the fact that, Piastri goes into the barrier, Ricciardo's the next car that comes along, takes the evasive action to make sure he doesn't crash into Piastri, and as a result of his actions, breaks his hand, which keeps him out of the next number of races as he heals and gets back to full health as well. And it's you can feel those emotions, right? That's why I think that Drive to Survive, they do such a good job, because, you know, it feels very authentic. It feels very real, the way that they play all this footage and they get all the players involved, like, you know, Ricardo, and they get Christian Horner, and you see these scenes like with Ricardo and his manager and stuff like that. And, you know, you really do feel like a fly in a wall at times. You feel like you're sitting in the garage, you're sitting in an office, or you're sitting at sometimes in their hotel rooms, or in their, you know, their own cars and their homes and things like that. So it was very, very, you know, it was very quite, you know, emotional and intense and things like that. And I felt it was interesting too, because especially when you get towards the end and the episode, I believe it's called The Three's a Crowd, because then, you know, now you have this, they look at it, you know, the whole AlphaTauri / Red Bull story later in the year. And Christian Horner, this is what I think is interesting too. I mean, we talked about it last year on the podcast here many, many times, and it was written about and talked about everywhere else, is just what's going to happen with Sergio Perez at Red Bull. Like how safe is his seat? And, you know, Christian Horner basically comes out and says in Drive to Survive that seat for 2025 at Red Bull is up for grabs. I mean, he doesn't necessarily say that it won't be Sergio Perez getting that drive, but I think he's basically throwing it out there that, hey, whoever wants the seat can come and get it. If somebody wants to come and race beside Max Verstappen after this year, after 2024, then, you know, compete for it, fight for it. You know, if you want it, come and get it. It's yours. So I wouldn't say that Perez is necessarily out. I was really quite fascinated that that Horner was so open in the fact that the seat is completely up for grabs. And Ricardo, of course, I mean, he's pretty upfront about it as well, saying that his chance to drive an AlphaTauri again is his opportunity to get back to Red Bull, and that's what his big aim is, and that's what he's gunning for, and that makes complete sense as well. I did think it was interesting too how they did manage to work Liam Lawson into the show as well. And once Ricardo had broken his hand in Zandvoort, Lawson was the one that came and filled in for the next couple of races there, next several races actually. And I thought it was interesting because when you get to that episode, Three's a Crowd, at the end, you know, they basically come down to the you know, it's like, okay, well, we're going to make an announcement tomorrow that you know, what our lineup for next year is going to be here at AlphaTauri. And it's interesting, even though that these are two separate teams, that when it comes to the driver personnel decisions, I mean, Red Bull is absolutely involved. I mean, this is a separate car, even though it's got the separate engine in it. And Peter Beyer, who is the CEO of AlphaTauri, and I know they got a new structure this year and everything, what with Franz Tost retiring after the end of last year. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to the car and the design and development and build of the car in Faenza in Italy, it's completely different. But boy, yeah, Red Bull is—they're all over the decisions for the for those drivers. I mean, it's been apparent over previous seasons of Drive to Survive, but this year I think even more than ever. But it was interesting. I'll play this clip in just a moment. But after it was done, I was actually quite quite taken aback by the attitude of Liam Lawson. You know, here's a young guy. You know, he's had success in Junior Formula, but you know, still to really be proven in Formula One. I'll let his words speak for themselves. So let's take a listen.
It's tough knowing that, you know, I don't get the seat, even though I've been the guy that's getting a seat. I don't know how to fucking answer that, honestly, because it's meant to be me. So.
Yeah, so there you go. It's a why try to describe it when you can hear it from the source themselves, right? But like I say, I was quite astounded to hear those comments from Liam Lawson. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda is an interesting driver, and there's been a lot of ups and downs with him over the last couple of years. You know, he was quite featured quite a bit over the last couple of years on DTS, and there's been, you know, stories and comments about him for quite some time, and his maturity and his commitment and things like that. But regardless, and you know, with that, I mean, we all know how quickly Red Bull can pull the trigger on drivers and change things around. ask Danny Kvyat, ask Pierre Gasly, ask Alex Albon, ask Nyck de Vries, etc. I mean, they've pulled the plug on drivers partway through a season many, many times in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised again if they do it again in the future. But when it comes to somebody like Yuki Tsunoda, despite the troubles that they may have had with him, and of course, you can make the political argument that to some extent, he's probably in that AlphaTauri because he's Japanese, and Honda is a Japanese engine manufacturer, and they may have some influence on having him in that car there too. But I don't know. I mean, we all know that that there's politics in Formula One's and Formula One and things like that are fun to speculate about. But even if that is true, I think that you know, to a certain extent, if Honda does have that influence in getting a Tsunoda a seat or having a say on whether or not he drives there, that if it was an untenable situation, I'm sure that AlphaTauri slash Red Bull would dig in their heels, and especially knowing that they're only going to have these Honda engines for a couple more years anyways, if they decide that they want to punt the driver that's been put there by, or that Honda's had significant say on having a seat at AlphaTauri, what do they really have to lose? Because if things don't work out, what's going to happen? They're not going to have their engines anymore. They're going to have their engines after the end of next year. So, I doubt they could sever that relationship. And would you really sever the relationship over, the firing of a driver? However, the point is that I think that Tsunoda is going to stay around because I think that they still think he has potential. Likewise with Ricardo, even though he's 34, going to be 35 this year. I mean, Fernando Alonso is proving that you can be 40 plus and still be a very, very competitive driver. Lewis certainly at 38 going on 39. Doesn't look like he's aged a day more or less, but still as quick and as good of a driver as ever. So I don't think that is necessarily a mark against Danny Ricciardo, but it was an interesting situation to see, and to see that specially addressed on Drive to Survive. I was really, like I say, taken aback by some of the comments in that very short clip by Liam Lawson. I almost felt like he was entitled to get that seat because he basically comes out and says that he beat the guy that got his seat, and I felt like he was talking more about he was talking about Tsunoda rather than Danny Ricciardo, but interesting to hear those words from Liam Lawson. So we'll watch that, and of course we'll see what happens with Lawson. He's going to be the reserve driver for AlphaTauri and Red Bull, or V-Carb, or whatever we're calling them this year. Kind of just wish they go back to Toro Rosso, but whatever. C'est la vie. Another good thread I liked on the show this year was the whole Alpine situation. And it was funny too, because Horner says at some point and I may have butchered this quote a little bit, but I wrote it down on my notepad. It was something to the effect of how Alpine and how the team operates is a bit of a mystery. So definitely got that vibe because you had Laurent Rossi and then Bruno Famin, and it was just I don't know. It just, the team seems a bit shambolic at times, and the whole way that they kind of documented the parting of ways with Otmar Szafnauer, and it's funny too because Szafnauer, he seems almost like a little bit of a, like a soft touch when it comes to like his management style. He seems like he's, almost too nice at some points. And, and of course, when it comes to the production part, they're always going to pick up the best sound bites and the best, the best clips and things like that. But it was an interesting, another sort of thread that weaved its way through the entire season. I thought it was interesting, too, how they did document the relationship between Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, and how the bad blood between those two drivers goes back quite a long way. And I thought it was cool, too, that they got a lot of this old footage of the two of them from when they were kids, when they were in karting and kind of coming up through the ranks. And so that was always cool to see. And it's funny that, when they kind of talk about it more, I think there was more Gasly talking about it rather than Ocon. Especially, I think at one point, Gasly says, yeah, that this is basically where things started to go sour was right here. But it's funny too, like as that kind of goes on and their season kind of blew hot and cold, more cold than hot. And they obviously struggled, but it was interesting towards the end. I almost kind of got the vibe from Pierre Gasly that even though it was a rough season, I felt that the way that he sort of described it was that the relationship between Ocon and Gasly is maybe not as frosty as it was, a year ago or prior to the two of them becoming teammates at Alpine. Another thing I like too was, as usual, there seems to be plenty of McLaren. I always like to hear Zach Brown, Lando Norris, that is a good person to always see. You know, he's kind of a funny guy and he's got a good personality. It was good to see Oscar Piastri a bit because, you know, last year, he comes in as this hot prospect and this rookie. And I'll be honest, when it comes down to like the race itself and the season gets started, I tend to read things more than watch things. And, what I like more about like Drive to Survive than say like any of like these press conferences or media scrums and things like that is they do get this more natural, drivers, not only in their natural environments, but just basically drivers when they're maybe not so much caught off guard, but drivers when they're just relaxing and just being themselves. And that gives it a completely different perspective because I've seen it a million times, like in a press conference or a media scrum, especially with soccer players, you see them, they're one person away from the mic or the camera, and then they get up there on a podium or into a scrum full of reporters. Everybody's got their phones out, their recorders out, and they completely change. It's just like somebody who was completely chill or funny, they get into this mode because they either don't like it or they're not good at it or they're a bit of a bit of both of those, turn into this very sort of bland and uninteresting person or sometimes a little bit adversarial. I mean, they're not all like Danny Ricciardo, unfortunately, but you know what I mean, right? So it's kind of nice to see these more unscripted moments, especially when it comes to like drivers like Lando and Piastri and all of them for that fact. What I also liked too was it was interesting to see more of the behind the scenes at Mercedes and the struggles that they had. And I thought a lot of the quotes from all of them really, from George Russell to Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff. And it's funny too because now that we know, because Lewis made the announcement, was about 2.5 weeks ago now, that he's going to switching to Ferrari for 2025, that a lot of these comments that were made either by Lewis or Toto Wolff during this latest drop of Drive to Survive, they now seem either oddly prophetic or super ironic in, when you look back at them. There's one quote from Toto basically saying that Lewis would look very strange wearing red overalls of Ferrari, and basically, he's going to be a Mercedes driver forever. And, Lewis saying that, Mercedes is home and he loves it, etc., and all these things. But there's one clip, and I'm going to play it here in a moment, where Lewis, he talks about, he's talking, I guess, about the car from the year before. So would that be the W13 or the W14, whatever it was in 2022, and just talking about the struggles that they had and what was wrong with the car. And he told the designers and the engineers, this is what you need to do. I'll play it. It's better if you hear from Lewis himself, but we'll talk about it in a moment because it's very interesting. If you go and watch that episode, I recommend watching that clip with Lewis. It's about a minute, 45 seconds long, something like that, about a minute long. And just look at like the body language and the way that Lewis reacts. Anyways, let's listen to it now.
Last year, I remember complaining to the team and been like, look, we have to make these changes, like otherwise this is the trajectory we're going to go on and this is where we're going to end up, and it's please do something about it. And I remember that they said like, we know what we're doing, you're wrong. And that was definitely an interesting moment. I mean, I was like, okay, I'll step back, don't want to step on anybody's toes. And then, when we got into the season, then we spoke again, like, oh, maybe you're right. So,
interesting, right? It's if you go and listen to Lewis, and especially if you look at that or watch that clip, the body language and the way that he reacts, that I can't help but wonder, like, the way that he was treated over that. You know, Lewis, you're wrong. But, you know, actually a year later, they come back and, you know, at least according to Lewis Hamilton and his account, they told him, well, you know, you were actually right all along. That seems to really bother him. And that's why I say when you watch that interview, that part of Lewis's recollection, his body language and the way that he turns his head, kind of goes down, and he's looking away from the camera. He's not looking at the camera anymore. It seems like he's really gone to another place mentally and emotionally. And I think that whole sequence, that whole episode really, really affected him. Anyways, I want to take another quick break here. When I come back, there's still a couple more things from Drive to Survive. I want to just talk about, finally wrap that one up, and then get into some more stories for testing, and then wrap this show up again for this evening. And we'll do so in just a moment after a quick break from our sponsors.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back to the show. Yes, so still talking about Drive to Survive. Couple final thoughts here before I kind of put this one to rest. So episode 8, Forza Ferrari, absolutely brilliant. I think out of the 6 seasons of Drive to Survive, it was one of the best, if maybe not the best, episodes that they've ever put together. Certainly, I think for me, it'd be top 3. Don't really want to spoil it too much if you haven't seen it yet, but definitely go check that out. The final episode, episode 10, Red or Black, was a good recap of the last few races of the 2023 season and the fight between Mercedes and Ferrari to clinch second of the constructors. A couple other things that I liked in season 6. This first one, you know, I've seen some mixed opinion on this, but certainly I'd like to see more of Danica Patrick. I enjoyed what she brought to the show. I also enjoyed what Claire Williams, the former team principal of Williams, which was her dad's team, or at least he founded it way back in the late 1970s. I like what Claire brought to that as well. I thought she was very insightful, also very personable. And Fred Vasseur, you know, if there's maybe someone to be the successor to Gunther Steiner, maybe Fred Vasseur is that. You know, he's certainly been featured or showed up in previous years of or seasons of Drive to Survive, but being the team principal of Alfa Romeo or Sauber or whatever it was at that time, you know, it was just he'd have like a little appearance here or there, maybe a couple of things, but now being team principal at Ferrari certainly figured quite a bit in this latest season. You know, a bit of a cheeky sense of humor. You know, I really like Fred Vasseur of what I've seen, and honestly, kind of like cheering for him to see what he can do with Ferrari. Now, this may be a bit of a more controversial take, but moving forward, and this is nothing really personal against Will Buxton. I know that he knows his stuff. He's been around forever, but I kind of feel that, with the additions of Danica Patrick and Claire Williams and, well, maybe not Fred Vasseur. I mean, you know, Danica's a former driver. Claire's a former team principal. And, you know, Buxton, like I say, he knows his stuff. But let's kind of freshen up a little bit. And also, I can't help but wonder, you know, maybe is it time to see, you know, kind of work Gunther out of it now that he's maybe done in Formula One? Well, who knows if he's done in Formula One, but maybe as a team principal. I mean, he's had a great run as well. But, you know, is it maybe time to freshen up some of these recurring characters that have been around for a long, long time? Like I said, I mean, there was, well, I guess it really depends which episode you talk about here. I mean, there's still plenty of Christian Horner and Red Bull as there have been in previous years, but maybe not quite as much. I thought they did a good job kind of spreading everything as well. And like I say, I didn't really mind too much about the fact that maybe they didn't talk too much about Red Bull and Max in general, other than maybe the big highlights and the big things, because like I said, at the top, I feel like they got plenty of coverage on it. And also too, like Max, I mean, like I've heard a lot of people kind of criticizing, oh, it's not the same, you know, if Max isn't involved. You know what? It's not his thing. And like I was saying just now, that when it comes to like getting involved and doing media work, that some people like it, some people hate it, some people like it but aren't good at it, some people hate it and are good at it, and some people, you know, whatever it is, Max is just one of those people that don't want to do it. And, you know, he comes across as, you know, that's, I mean, he says his bit and things like that, but you can kind of tell it's not really his thing. Because it's funny, whenever you see like Max interviewed, he kind of says his piece and whatnot. But I thought what is interesting, when you see some of these, you know, archival, maybe not archival bits, but some of these other bits of footage that have been thrown in there, apart from Max, you know, talking to the camera and just, you know, answering whatever it might be. You see this Red Bull charity shoot that was at Christian Horner's estate, some of these different promo stunts that they do. When you see Max just kind of being Max, he seems to me to be a bit more of a normal kind of like person, right? Like I feel more of an authentic vibe rather than, you know, I'm just here so I don't get fined kind of attitude. Not that he's Marshawn Lynch, but you know what I mean? It doesn't feel as forced. So I kind of enjoy to see those unscripted moments. Pardon me, with Max Verstappen, that kind of like get dropped in there, because I think we see a little bit more of the real Max. So anyways, that's you know, my little take on it. And then just a couple of things here, finally, to wrap it up. After watching all the 10 episodes, all the different storylines that were kind of weaved into it, I can't help but feel that this year I'm really going to be cheering for Danny Ricciardo. And I'll admit, I'm the first person to really kind of like, you know, go hard and lean into like these underdog stories and people like that. I mean, it would be a great redemption story to see Danny Ricciardo come full circle, be able to get back to where he was and get that seat back at Red Bull. I mean, that's a very, very tall order. He's just one of many, many drivers that want that second seat beside Max Verstappen at Red Bull in 2025. Maybe he does it this year, maybe he doesn't, maybe he ends up having a good run with AlphaTauri or VCARB or whatever we're calling it now. Carlos Sainz, I just, you know, I feel that, you know, I'm going to be like a pretty big Carlos fanboy this year. I think that, you know, again, he's got something to prove. You know, he's become the odd person out at Ferrari, losing out to both Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton. I think that he's got something left to do in Formula One. And certainly I thought it was kind of a funny moment, a cool moment, when after the Singapore Grand Prix, when they tell him to go and turn the car off, and he's like, that's P1. And he says to his engineer, say it again. I thought it was kind of funny that the whole singing the smooth operator, I thought that was a cool kind of moment as well. And another person I really liked as well was Alex Albon. He featured quite a bit more. He seems like got a nice personality, and it was kind of funny too when he was kind of kind of scripted everything for Box to Box Films, just talking about the whole Danny Ricciardo story. You know, he's sitting in the car there with Logan Sargeant, his teammate, and kind of scripting, you know, I can picture exactly what happens now. You know, Nick DeFries, you know, struggles, he gets fired, Ricciardo comes in, you know, Honey Badger is back, the whole thing. And it's kind of funny because that came later on in the show, like after like Ricciardo and that whole Nick DeFries situation basically worked out the way that
helm on its head. So it was kind of funny that, you know, that happened. And I'm sure the folks at Box to Box Films, you know, probably loved that moment because it was a great soundbite and a great moment on the camera there. And the other thing is too, that just in general that, you know, like it's funny when you look at these drivers and, you know, how much they put in and covet getting one of these seats in Formula One. It really is amazing, right? That sometimes, you know, you get kind of like emotionally kind of attached to them and you cheer for them and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when you look at the lifestyles that they live, and of course, not everybody in Formula One lives these glitzy, glamorous, you know, lifestyles, but when you see them, they've all got these, you know, six-figure like value watches, you know, expensive clothes and houses, and they live in all these exotic locations. They have these gorgeous wives and girlfriends and things like that. It's just like, at the end of the day, if they lose their seat, they're still going to be living, you know, very, very well and be very, very well off. So, you know, maybe I've become a little bit kind of like cynical about them, or cynical about it. But, you know, if somebody was to lose their seat, I don't necessarily feel super bad for them that otherwise, because they're still going to be doing pretty good in life. But hey, that's just my take. Finally, just to wrap it up, you know, like I say, I think that season six, of Drive to Survive, big improvement of over season five. I think they got back to their roots, much more watchable, much more enjoyable, flowed really, really nice. Like I say, I watched seven episodes on Friday night, sat down, watched the last couple Saturday morning. It just flew by compared to season five, which was, you know, really, really draggy in my opinion. And so I would say, you know, a solid 8.5 out of 10. So there you go. Anyways, let's talk now about preseason testing. The third and final day at Bahrain wrapped up on Friday afternoon. And it was Charles Leclerc putting in 74 laps in the Ferrari. His fastest time was a 130.322. That was compared to a 130.368 set by George Russell in the Mercedes W15. So only 4.5 hundredths of a second difference between George and Charles in their fastest laps. George putting in 67 laps. Zhou Guan Yu was the third fastest driver on Friday in the Sauber. Zhou's fastest time was a 130.647, or about 3.5 tenths behind Charles Leclerc. They had Max Verstappen putting 66 laps in the RB20. Max's fastest time was a 130.755, or about 4.5 tenths behind Charles Leclerc. Then you had Yuki Tsunoda, Alex Albon, Oscar Piastri, Fernando Alonso, so Carlos Sainz, and then Sergio Perez rounding out the fastest 10 times on Friday. Sergio, his fastest time was a 131.483, which was about 1.15 seconds behind Charles's fastest time. So they were all running the C3 or C4 tires. Lewis was actually running a C5. His fastest time was a 131.999. That was almost 1.7 seconds slower than Charles Leclerc. So anyways, that wraps up testing. If we look at some of the overall times, so the fastest driver of the 22nd, which was Thursday, was Carlos Sainz. He had a 129.921. As I mentioned on Friday, the fastest time was Charles Leclerc, a 130.322. And then if you go back to Thursday, the fastest time was set by Max Verstappen. He had a 131.344. So certainly it's very, very interesting to see who did what. If you look at some of the miles that the different teams put on their cars, so if leading the way in that category, Haas, they put in 441 laps, or the equivalent of 2,386 kilometers over the three-day test in Bahrain. Ferrari, not too far behind. They put in just over 2,200 kilometers of testing. Red Bull, 2,100 kilometers. Sauber and Aston Martin, both in just a hair over 2,000 kilometers. Red Bull, just a hair under 2,000 kilometers. Williams at the bottom, they only put in 299 laps, which is just about 1,600 kilometers or 1,000 miles a run. The driver that put in the most laps was Kevin Magnussen, the Haas driver. He put in a 1,200 kilometers or 239 laps. Second most laps run was Carlos Sainz with 224, Danny Ricciardo for VCARB with 210, Max Verstappen 209, and Nico Hülkenberg put in 202 kilometers, or pardon me, 202 laps in the Haas as well. So the engine stats, so Mercedes logged the most kilometers in Bahrain, 1,367 laps or 7,400 kilometers of mileage for the Mercedes-powered cars. Ferrari had 1,236, which is the equivalent of 6,689 laps, pardon me. Honda was 758 laps or 4,102 kilometers. And Renault was 334 laps, which is about 1,810 kilometers. And of course, that's all proportional because Mercedes and Ferrari, they do supply more engines to everyone else. So it's kind of goes together with the amount of laps run. So, you know, as I've been saying for the last couple of shows, sometimes it is a little bit difficult to kind of benchmark between the different teams, where they kind of match up to one another, because they're not always running the same tires, the same trim, the same fuel loads as anyone around them. But where it gets interesting is where you see some of the different comments from the different teams and the different drivers or the different team principals or engineers, whoever it might be, just to where they feel, where they're kind of matching up compared to themselves or their observations compared to where they might be in relation to some of their other the other teams out there. So Lando Norris from McLaren, when he was talking after the test on Friday, Lando had the following to say, quote, "Do I think we've taken a step forward? Absolutely. Do I think we've made a lot of things better? Yes. But you just never really know at the end of the day where we stand compared to the others. I think we're in a good position. We had a decent car at the end of last season. I think we've definitely taken some steps in the right direction, but I think it's still a very long way behind Red Bull and a long way behind Ferrari. So plenty of work for us to still try and achieve, but also plenty of things that we've learned over the last few days for us to implement before next week." Norris did go on to say when he was asked about about the car, the MCL 38 and the testing, and just maybe some of the little problems that that popped up during testing, he said they were not the end of the world. Went on further to say, yes, just a few setbacks here and there over the last few days. Not the end of the world, definitely, but you always want a perfect day. We didn't get any long running high fuel stuff Thursday night, and we moved into Friday morning and we still didn't get it. So not exactly what I wanted, but still plenty of things learned and a lot of stuff that I wanted to get done. I was happy for the most part, but there are a couple of little things I wish I could have done more, end quote. So interesting, a bit of a mixed reaction from Lando Norris there. You know, feels like they've made some progress. And it's interesting too, because, you know, even somebody that's there, one of the drivers that's in the car, that's seen, you know, all his competitors out there, still doesn't really have a good benchmark of how they measure up against others, but still he feels that they may be behind Red Bull and Ferrari. And I must admit that I'm a little bit hopeful that Ferrari's managed to do something to close the gap, because, I mean, certainly in terms of pace, they were there, right up there with Red Bull at the end of the season. I mean, it might not have been demonstrated as much as we would have liked to see in terms of, say, Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz fighting out with Checo and Max Verstappen. We didn't really see that very often, but I mean, there were signs last year that perhaps something good was happening. And McLaren, of course, last year, they got off to a very, very rough start, and it wasn't until, you know, just a month before the summer break, when we got to the Austrian Grand Prix just after the July 4th, you know, just at that time of the summer, that's when those first rounds of really, really major upgrades hit the car. And it was immediately the improvement that we saw for Lando, then Oscar Piastri gets them a week later, and they never really looked back. I mean, they did much, much better going into that second half of the season than when they struggled through the first half of the season. But so it's interesting that, you know, that Lando's kind of almost like, you know, don't don't overpromise and maybe deliver more when it comes to the season. So that'll certainly be a situation to keep an eye on. So if you take a look at some of the comments from Aston Martin's technical director, Dan Fallows, he says that he feels that the team has made what he called the hoped for steps with the AMR 24, which is the new car that they have this year compared to last year's car. Anyways, Fallows had the following to say, quote, when we went into the season really looking at for a step over the winter, we wanted to make sure we did get an improvement. Even though it's an evolution of last year's car, we wanted it to be a strong improvement as well as a strong evolution. And we have seen that step. We've seen that benefit. So we're very pleased about that. I think the most important thing for us is where we go from here. We weren't 100% pleased with what we achieved in our in-season development last year. And we wanted to make sure that we can compete at the top level in terms of in-season as well. I think we are mostly keen on making sure we made a step on last year, which we have done. So I think we can certainly tick that box, end quote. So very, very interesting. I mean, that I think that's a very, very good, admission from Dan Fallows that I think it was obvious for everyone last year. He said, we weren't 100% pleased with what we achieved in our in-season development last year. And I think that is a bit of a, that's a massive understatement because the development and the upgrades, and I'm doing the inverted commas here so you can't see it, but the upgrades actually set them back during the course of last season. They didn't have the effect that the McLaren's upgrades had for their car. And certainly they went backwards. Because, I mean, Fernando was one of the great stories of the first half of the season. All those podiums and all the good things that Fernando Alonso was doing in that AMR 23. It was a great storyline. It was fun to watch and to see that pace that car had. And the fact that Fernando still has the fight and that he was taking it to all the other drivers around him. And the fact that he was consistently able to deliver it more than his teammate Lance Stroll, who, of course, as we found out, was struggling with that broken hand and toe and everything a lot more than maybe we knew during the season. But still, I mean, let's not take anything away from Fernando. When that car, that AMR 23, was working well in the first half of last season, I mean, it was just a rocket ship. And it was cool, some of the comments that we saw in Drive to Survive, where some of the, I think it was Lewis that said that the Aston Martin was a rocket ship. And it was funny, some of the other quotes from some of the other people, I can't remember who said it now, but it was something to the effect, it's like, well, how did the Aston Martin get so good? And the reply from somebody else was something to the effect of, well, they just hired a bunch of aerodynamicists away from Red Bull, which I thought was a bit of a funny quote, but certainly interesting that some of those comments by Fallows. But yeah, I mean, he does nail it. They do need to improve their in-season development, because we have seen, especially last year, their out-of-season development, the development from 2022 to the 2023 car was very, very good. I mean, it was a much, much bigger improvement last year than we saw in the car year previously. And as you see, like anytime you hear Lawrence Stroll interviewed, not just in Drive to Survive, but anytime, I mean, he says that this is a team that they want to build into a championship winner and a race winner. And if they can get all these things right, then there's no reason to think that they won't achieve their very lofty goals. Mercedes has also had some interesting comments over the last couple of days, and they've acknowledged that they got more work to do when it comes to getting their qualifying pace and maximizing that with the W15. So their trackside engineering director, Andrew Shovlin, said earlier this week that they need to do what he called, quote, more work to do on a single lap when it comes to their qualifying and their free practice pace. Anyways, Shovlin had a couple of quotes in a social media debrief a couple of days ago, and as follows, quote, we're still trying to fine tune the setup. There will definitely be more to come. Overall, we're happy. We've definitely made progress in terms of pace. The long run probably looks like our strength at the moment. There's more work to do on a single lap, but we should be in a position to hopefully put in a good showing when we get back on track. It's really encouraging with a lot of the problems that the drivers have been talking about in the last 12 and even 24 months with the W13 and W14. We seem to have got a grips with it, end quote. So there you go. Some acknowledgements that they've made some improvements. But again, it sounds like very much like Lando Norris's comments, they're very aware of the fact, Mercedes, that is, that they still have some tweaks and things that they need to do to maximize performance. So Pierre Gasly, the Alpine driver, who featured quite heavily in Drive to Survive, he had some quotes as well about the new A524, which is Alpine's 2024 Formula One World Championship contender. Gasly said that the car doesn't look great after the test in Bahrain. Esteban Ocon and Gasly were only 16th and 17th of the year, they were 16th and 17th out of the overall times for the test, and it might not be the slowest car out of all 10 teams, but it's still got a lot that they need to do to get it where it needs to be. Gasly was interviewed by Sky TV, and he said, quote, "To be fair, I haven't really focused on the others because there's been so much going on our side. I don't think we look great, but at the same time, we still have a couple of days to really understand everything we've done. We put our car upside down, done a lot of tests, so hopefully some analysis and answers will bring some more performance, and then we'll find out. No one will hide anymore next Friday. But then I think we'll have to be patient, even if it's not like what we like as drivers, but clearly it might take some time before we really unlock the performance we want from that car," end quote. So there you go. Maybe if you're looking to pick your Formula One fantasy team for next year, maybe you might want to, maybe not want to lean too much into Alpine and Gasly and his teammates, Esteban Ocon over the, or at least for the next couple of races. Okay, time for one final break. Be back in a moment. Just a couple of last stories to talk about before this wrap this show up. So we'll do so in just a moment. So please don't go away.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, welcome back to the show. And as I mentioned, there's just a couple more little stories I just wanted to talk about before we turn the lights off for one more night and get ready to, well, go back to regular life for a couple more days. Anyways, this was a kind of an interesting one because I saw some of these quotes here from Fernando Alonso. Was just talking about his position coming up this year. He's out of contract at Aston Martin at the end of this year. It's funny too because Claire Williams said at one point in Drive to Survive, the latest season, that Fernando's been very, very good about, you know, and I'm just kind of parsing and paraphrasing her comments here, but he's done very well to kind of position himself and move to the team and the car that would basically give him the best challenge or the best opportunity to do well in Formula One. So as I mentioned, he's out of contract at the end of this year. He's been there for a couple of years. So he's 42 right now, still looking really, really good, very competitive. Last year, we marked 20 years since Fernando's first win in Formula One, but he had a couple of things to say at during preseason testing in Bahrain. He feels like he's in a really good position to negotiate a new deal to wherever he ends up next year. Anyways, Fernando had the following quotes. In my case, it's very interesting because I have, I think, a good position to negotiate, but I want to at least do the first couple of races without thinking too much. I want to see myself into a new season. It's going to be the longest ever season in Formula One at 24 races. I want to change a little bit to some time of travel schedule and things to be really efficient this year and arrive with high energy at the end of the year. So a couple of things that are my main focus now are not so much next year. Then he goes on to say that just sort of talking about Lewis and his move to Ferrari. Quote, it was a surprise. I was expecting maybe around summertime to have a little bit of action, but it started early. There were some leaks. Probably Mercedes and Ferrari have to announce earlier than expected. So after that, definitely more action going on. So Fernando is basically saying that this year's silly season, what you know, the driver market is always referred to, might be sillier than usual. So finally, one more story here. Just this is a story from Adam Cooper over at motorsport.com. And Ferrari says that they reckon that Audi is going to have what they call a huge challenge to get ready for 2026. I mean, they're going to be building a car and a power unit and everything else. And these were the words of Ferrari's power unit technical director, Enrico Galtieri. And the quote was the following when he was interviewed by motorsport.com. Quote, "It's hard to say, obviously, because I'm not in their facility or in their shoes. But in the end, I think that for sure the level of complexity of this product is high, and it's about that. And it's true that preparing for a brand new project is not an easy task for anyone. So I can for sure respect the job that they are doing on this, because for sure you need to learn and create something that is not only related to design competencies or skill from the engineering perspective, but also logistics and infrastructure. So they are facing an important and huge challenge as well." End quote. So head on over to motorsport.com, check out that story written by Adam Cooper. And I think that there's definitely some very interesting quotes in there by Gualtieri. And certainly, I mean, if they need any tips and about getting you know, a new team up and ready and running, go talk to Honda. Well, maybe not so much about the team, but Honda came into things in 2015 with the power unit side that was certainly, it started much later than Ferrari, Mercedes, and Renault prior to 2014. So it took them a long time to really get things up and running. And certainly Audi has you know, bitten off a very, very big project in getting a team into Formula One for next year. And well, not for next year, for 2 years from now. And certainly it's one we're all going to be looking forward to seeing how they do once they hit the track. And this time next year, we'll have actually have seen the Audi for the very first time, as we'll obviously expecting to see them hit the track in Bahrain for a preseason testing in February of 2025. Anyways, that's it. I'm starting to run out of breath here. It is now, well, almost quarter to midnight here in the studio. So it's time to wrap it up. Thank you one and all for listening to the show. Oh, actually, I'm a little bit, I do have one more thing here. I did have one final, I had a message here come into the studio line from Michelle Z in West Palm Beach. Wanted to play this. My apologies, Michelle. I almost forgot about you. So let's play that before I turn off the lights. Turn it off. So let's have a listen now.
Hi, Mark. This is Michelle. I am in sunny South Florida in the West Palm Beach area. And my question is, during testing, the engines that they use, are those part of their yearly allocation? So they have four engines this year. Does the testing engine count as towards those? Thank you for your time.
All right. Well, thanks for that. And yeah, you're absolutely correct. They do have the four power units for this year. Was increased by one over last year. And this was like a cost-cutting measure that was put in place a number of years ago. And we see this throughout the season, all these components and gearboxes and other bits and pieces that go onto the engines, like the MGUH, MGUK, the ICE, the internal combustion unit, or the internal combustion engine, et cetera. And all these, you know, the penalties that that go into it once they exceed their limits, and, you know, penalties when they change them at the track and stuff like that. But when it comes to preseason testing, we're still not into the season itself. So as far as I know, that doesn't count against their allotment for the entire year. And when you think about it, I mean, that is a lot. I mean, we're going to have, what, 24 races this year and four power units that, you know, they had to do something. And I totally respect and understand the fact that they want to keep, you know, the costs under control. And we have this $130 million budget cap in place, because I mean, back in the day before the budget cap came into play a couple of years ago, it literally was spend as little or as much as you want. It doesn't matter. There's no floor, no ceiling, just, you know, have at it and just do what you want. But nowadays, I mean, I think for the long-term viability and survivability of not just the individual teams, but of the sport itself, it is important to have these limits in place. And certainly when it comes to that, all the limits and allotments for the power units and all those components and gear boxes, et cetera, is an important thing to have. But great question. And I've noticed over the past couple of weeks since I put the studio line in place, that it seems that that Florida seems to be the one that represents really great. A lot of the messages and call-ins we've had from folks have come from Florida. And I'm a little bit jealous. It sounded by the message there that things in West Palm Beach over the weekend were a lot nicer than they were up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I guess that's the big difference between Vancouver, Canada and South Florida at the end of February. But hey, I like where I live too. We have our moments, maybe just when it comes to weather-wise, that just don't ask me in February how the weather compares to some of the warmer climates in North America or in other parts of the world that where you might be listening to the podcast right now. Anyways, it is now time to turn off the lights here in the studio. Got a little bit of editing to do before I call it a night. Again, thank you one and all for joining me this evening. I have a special guest joining me later this week and looking forward to doing that one. And I'll tweet out a teaser and some questions, because I know that once he comes on the show that I know that a lot of you will want to ask questions and weigh in on that. So I'll just leave that hanging for a couple of days. And again, if you want to support the show, easiest way is just to spend a couple minutes of your time. Just head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, etc. Leave a 5-star rating and review if you enjoy the show, and share it with a friend. And that's the easiest way to do so if you enjoy what I do here. And then also give me a follow on X at ScooterF1Pod. And if you want to also send me an email, you can send me an email at ScooterF1Pod@gmail.com. And that's it. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to talking to you all again in a couple of days. And until then, take care of each other and have a great week. Bye for now.